Today, we get to speak with a very special soul, the beautiful Reetta Pohjoinen from Finland. Reetta is the principal of the homeopathy school Helsinki. She is a mystical mentor who works with women using her expertise in homeopathy, astrology, shiatsu, yoga, water, and mentoring. Reetta has 4 children and she is a maternal yoga teacher. She has birthed all her children naturally in water using homeopathy. Reetta has worked for 25 years with the Sacred Feminine, empowering women with pregnancies, births, hormonal issues, trauma, and grief. She is also a death doula. Today was truly one of those really special conversations that will stay with me forever. Reetta is so generous with her sharing of information and of her personal and private lessons that she's learned throughout her life, and happy to pass that knowledge on to the rest of us to learn from. So I'm incredibly grateful to Reetta for that. You can learn more about Reetta at www.reettapohjoinen.com. That's reettapohjoinen.com. And you can find out more about the Homeopathy School Helsinki at www.homeopathyschool.fi. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangouts. Today, we get to speak with Reetta Pohjoinen from Helsinki in Finland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I feel really honored and happy to be here and to talk to you today on this beautiful, actually a little bit rainy, November day here in Helsinki, Finland.
Oh, now, can you please, for our listeners, just say your name correctly? Because I know that I butchered it, but it's such a beautiful name. I would love for you to pronounce it like how you would.
Okay, it is a Finnish name. It's Reetta Pohjoinen.
Pohjoinen. It's beautiful.
Yes.
And, you know, it's funny, Reetta. I do find that when I'm chatting with fellow homeopaths, we've never met each other. You know, we don't know each other from a bar of soap. We've got a mutual friend, the beautiful Janie Laval. And the second you came on, we were just chatting straight away. And I've just run out to the car and gotten feathers. And we're just like showing feathers, because for our listeners who are just listening on the audio and not on the YouTube, Reetta has got these beautiful feather earrings and has done a lot of provings of birds. So I, of course, just had to show and tell and go pull out all my parrot feathers and my emu feathers that I have. But isn't that incredible? Homeopaths around the world, you know, we can always find something to talk about.
Definitely. And I think that is the beauty of homeopathy, because you can really dive into, like, for example, the birds that I've always been really interested in them. My father is a bird watcher, so I've always had birds around. And then when I started doing bird remedies at our school and privately, I just completely fell into the world of the birds. So when you come up with all those feathers, I'm like, oh my God, I mean, they're just so beautiful. I'm just in awe.
So beautiful, hey. Well, can you please tell our listeners how you were first introduced to homeopathy?
Yes. I was actually 19 years old and I had been traveling around the world, and I went to Fiji Islands and I got stung by some bees. They have like really huge bees there. And then I went on, I was like half a year sick, and I've never really in my life used a lot of medications, but I was really desperate because I had rashes and I had infections and things. And I went to a homeopath and she gave me a dose of phosphorus C200 and I was magically cured. So then it took another 2 years. I became pregnant with my son Amadeus. And when I gave birth to him, I didn't use homeopathy there, but I gave birth to him in water, and I was very alternative. He made me a birth activist. And then when he was 5 months old, the old story, he didn't sleep. I was becoming a really sepia mother. I was 23 years old. I was really young. And then he had a rash on his skin and then all kinds of things. And I went to a homeopath and he got calcium carbonicum C200, magically cured. So I was like, what is this? In a month's time, I started studying homeopathy.
Oh, that is beautiful.
That was it. Yeah. So then I have another 3 children as well. So I became really interested in, you know, treating mothers, children, births. So I was really, really lucky to have 4 natural births, not interfered with anything else than helped with homeopathy and a little bit of acupuncture. And of course, I was a maternal yoga instructor as well from the beginning. So with all the breathing and everything, but I knew that this is magic for mothers. So my mission has always been to empower women, mothers, children. And I kind of had like a children's, you know, and mothers taking care center in the beginning. So that's really what I focused on. And of course, then later on, I started to teach. And actually, I started teaching with the Bird Remedies. That was my first teaching in 2018. And before that, I had held a lot of first aid courses for mothers. I just wanted to empower them. And I wanted everybody to have the kid at home. And then I started teaching at the school. In a couple of years, I became a member. I started owning the school. And then from there onwards, now it's 10 years since I've been the principal and the owner of the school. And I'm still very passionate about mothers and women. Of course, now I'm in menopause myself, so I have a lot of menopausal women. And I work a lot with the sacred feminine and with all kinds of spiritual, mystical things, you know. And I have a team. So like Jonna in my team is more focused on the children. She's living the time when she has the small children. It's kind of like natural.
When I saw recently some photos of you and Janie together in Ireland, I was just, with all my heart and soul, wish I was at least a fly on that wall if I couldn't be there myself. But I would have loved to listen in on those conversations. I'm sure they were magical and mystical.
Definitely. I was so happy, you know, to be able to go and meet three of the teachers of our school. So Declan Hammond has been teaching at our school for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, because actually the previous principal was his student and his assistant. So from Ireland. And then when I got to know Antoinette McQueenie and Janie Lavelle, I immediately asked them to come and teach at our school, because I think the way they teach and the way they do homeopathy is really like to this date and very feminine. So our school has always been like a source school in the way that I love source teachers. Alice Timmerman has been teaching ever since, Divya Chopra, Misha Norland, of course. And yeah, many people who work, you know, from the source. And of course, we do love all kinds of teachers, but it seems like that's the way we are going. And I think Janie already mentioned to you a little bit that we have a new beautiful project that is landing next year that has to do with source teaching. So we'll tell about that a little bit later on.
Oh, you can tell about it now.
Well, actually, we are opening a sacred source school, which is for also non-homeopaths. So we are sharing all our magic to the women out there. Of course, men are also welcome. So, you know, and we will be meeting in Ireland, in Finland, and in south of France. And it will go with the Celtic Wheel. So we have like 8 meetings, 4 in person. And all the details are still to be put perfectly in place. But our wish was to go beyond the beyond, and to share everything, because, like, you know, I'm a shiatsu therapist as well. I'm an astrologer. I do a lot of astrosophy, all the yoga, all the mystical. I'm a practicing Sufi. So, you know, we just want to share all that. And of course, the main thing is homeopathy. But, you know, it's more a school of healing. Yeah.
Have you been in touch with Vladimir Petrocchi yet?
No, I have not.
Oh, I have to. I'll put you in touch with him, because he's got the Quintessence Forum that he created, and it's all of this. I think you two seriously vibe. that's absolutely incredible. And so it's only in person. It's not online, hey?
Well, it is both, but we do hope for people to be able to come like 4 times a year.
Okay. Oh, my
God. We'll see. And the idea was, because when I did the Bupo Scandinavicus, so the homeopathic remedy of Hedwig, I actually did it in Tanzania in Homeopathy for Health in Africa, because Camilla asked me to teach them how to do a trituration. So we did it there with their staff. And I was like, we need a school where you get an invitation. So that's how things might be going, you know, that people get invitations and then either you come or you don't.
Wow. Talk to me a little bit, because you said you've done a lot of travel and you mentioned about growing up in Tanzania and Ethiopia or something. Like, how did that all happen?
My father is a forestry man, but he worked for the UN and, you know, he worked with them. So when I was young, I grew up in Tanzania. So like my first memories are of a rhinoceros chasing after me. And I'm thinking it's so exciting in a car, though, in a Land Rover, not just running. And so it was a lot of this kind of excitement. My father is a Sagittarius, a very strong Sagittarius. So he always took us on adventures. So we spent there when I was really small, I was there. And then from 11 to 15, we lived in Ethiopia. So actually during Mengistu time, during communism, during civil war. So it was kind of like an initiation to life and death completely. And like when I think about myself as a homeopath, I always think of myself that I'm like birthing worlds and birthing students and, you know, birthing projects. I always have numerous projects going on. So I think it comes from living in Africa, growing up in Africa, because you never know what happens the next day. So it's better to live full in the moment.
That is beautifully said, and that is so true, so true. Yeah, and if you were running when that rhino was chasing you, you would not be here right now.
Nope. Yeah, well, you are from South Africa, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, from Cape Town. Oh. So I lived there for 17 years and then I went to New Zealand. Yeah, no, it's a pretty magical place. My husband keeps wanting to go back on holiday, but I'm actually, frankly, too scared to go back. But I am tempted to go to Tanzania to homeopathy for health in Africa. I really would like to go and do a stint there. I think that would be pretty
do that. I was there. I've been there twice now. And of course, Camilla Scher is a really dear friend of mine. So I've been just also visiting her. So it is a beautiful project. We did fundraising for it a couple of times in Finland. So yeah, I think it's a project that everybody, all homeopaths should join in some way, definitely.
No, it really is. We did a bit of fundraising for them last year as well. And yeah, they're incredible. So just talk to me a little bit about maybe some of your triturations, you know, the remedies that you've birthed. What are some of the bird remedies that you've done?
Yeah. So we did Siberian Jay is like the sacred bird of the Sami people. You know, our indigenous people are the Sami people. So it's called Siberian Jay. It's for Alzheimer's. We all lost our memory. I mean, it was crazy. And then we did Black Swan. So to compare it with the White Swan that Camilla Scher did in Finland, we've done Wood Grouse, the really big black, you know, macho. It's like Nux Vomica to the potence of 10.
Wow.
And then I did Corvus Corax, which was really lovely diving under. We did it together with Janie Lavelle. Actually, she did it separately in Ireland, but the feather was from Ireland. Then I took some Ethiopian flamingo. Fantastic.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, that was so much fun. But the most fun was peacock. We did the peacock feather. Oh my God, that was so much fun. And then, Bubo Scandinavicus, because I love owls. They've always been like, I'm a teacher, so I love owls. And I wanted to do the Lapland Scandinavian owl, you know, Hedwig from Harry Potter. So that's what we did. And then the last one we did was Halietus alpicella. So we wanted to do a Finnish eagle, because eagle for me has been a really very fantastic remedy, especially with my own grieving process. So I wanted to do a Finnish version. And it was all about, you know, the sacred masculine landing. It was like, we need the sacred masculine on this planet. And then I've done at least twice the Maria Magdalena Road. That has always been really important together with Alice Timmerman. And then the last iteration that I just did was Cloudberry, which I call the Lapland's Gold. And that was really like the sacred feminine landing into the full potential without trauma. So we were taken to a place where women don't have trauma anymore, or where, you know, they are just like supporting each other. There is no sister wound. And that's been one of the most amazing remedies. And I'm still finding out about that.
I would some of that remedy, because I went to like a Christian girls' school, and tell you what, that wound is deep. Just all the backstabbing and bitchiness. And yeah, that's something that I really feel needs some healing. So I would love to, try some of that.
I will definitely send you some. And actually, those are the themes of Maria Magdalena as well. You know, the Magdalena laundries and all of that from Ireland. I'll send you that as well. Yeah, they're beautiful remedies. And I've also done like Hahnemannian provings. Together, I did the Dynamis with Camilla and Jeremy Scher twice. So, you know, I've done those. And at school, I've also done the Hahnemannian. But at the moment, I love doing triturations because I feel I'm a very shamanic homeopath. So I feel I just want to be embodied together with the remedy. So, but we do all of them at school. So this year we are doing a trituration with the students. I can't say the remedy because they'll hear this podcast maybe, but I'm really looking forward to that. And yeah, I think it's really lovely to be experimental. I've done, because I do astrology, so I've done a lot of the planets as well, like Mars, Venus, and so on. And that's a part of my work where I'm going more towards. I have this service, Divine Purpose and Passion, where I look at a person's map, the astrological map. And then because I do astrosophy, it's a living instrument of astrology. It's a very feminine way. It's a ceremonial way, and it has 21 signs in it. So beyond the ordinary 12 signs, we have extra mystical signs. So I'm doing remedies out of those signs because the swan is there, the corvus is there, the eagle is there, the cetus that we just did in Ireland, we tuned into the whale energy, it's over there. And when I see a person's chart and I look at their north node, their soul mission, when I look at their career, their MC and so on, I can support that with homeopathy. And it's magic. It's the golden compass I looked for all my life. And it's just there. And when it just starts opening, it's like, I'm at awe. I feel so blessed to have found this in this lifetime, really, honestly, Eugenia.
Yeah. I am too scared to go down the road of learning astrology. I'll be honest, because I think that would be all consuming. I already find homeopathy is so all consuming. And so like, I know astrology will be the same. I've always loved astrology because when I was a little girl, my mom always said, because I'm an Aries, she said she had so much trouble with me because I just, you know, wouldn't listen to what she said. And then in complete desperation, she found this astrology book and read up on Aries, and it said that they won't do anything unless you explain to them why they have to do it. And literally, I'm still like that to that day. And apparently that was life-changing for her. So even as a little girl, I knew about my star sign, and I knew, like, because she would always tell the story. So it's always something that I've been interested in. But I just too scared to go read any books on it or go too deep in it, because I think I would lose myself, because it is fascinating. And so many homeopaths that we've had on the show, Gabriel Blass and, you know, Peter Berryman. There's been a few homeopaths on the show who use astrology with their homeopathy, but I'm too scared because it sounds like a minefield. It sounds like you would just lose yourself in it.
The thing is that, you know, well, actually, I've always loved astrology, but I didn't have a deep understanding in it. But when I started studying Omega Codex and Astrosophy, which is kind of like a living instrument, and I do a ceremony with every single, like with Aries, we do a ceremony and we have our offerings. It's easy to understand it because you live it. Mm. And I see the stars and the star signs as our sisters and brothers out there who are supporting us. And when Amadeus died, you know, I wanted to understand why he left, because it was really magical. I saw him enlightened just before he left. And actually, I gave him some kryptonite 10M a week before, and he got healed. I saw him enlightened, and he left.
Can you backtrack that story a little bit? Because that is a very profound story.
It is.
Do you mind backtracking that a little bit, as far back as to go?
Yeah, I can go into it. And I'm writing about it. It's just a very heavy story. Mm. So I can go back to the fact that I was never supposed to become a mother or a homeopath. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a human rights lawyer because I grew up in Africa and I see all the injustice. And I was ready to go to Harvard. I was ready to, you know, be really career oriented, which I still am. But anyways, you know, and go that road. And then I got pregnant with him. He just came and the light stroked me. And I was like, oh my God, what's happening? And he just downloaded me with everything that I had to change my path. So he was my biggest teacher, and he still is, but he's just on the other side. So he had Asperger's or whatever. He was an autistic, little, beautiful light being, too sensitive for this world. And I always tried to help him and most probably tried to fix him, which I don't anymore. So if I didn't have the three other children, I would have really thought I was a crappy mother and I just didn't know anything. So what I did, I'm very much Gemini and I have like five planets in Gemini. I studied everything I could in this world to help my little boy. And I succeeded in many things and I supported him in many things. But then when he was 13, he was also a shaman. When it was full moon, he didn't sleep. First it was one night, then it was three nights, then it was five nights, and then it was psychosis.
Wow.
And I've never been to psychosis myself. I tried everything. We went to all the homeopaths around the world. Nobody could treat his light because it was so bright. So he ended up in the mental hospital. And when I had to put him there, I started fighting to get him out. So from 13 till 18, that's how we lived. And the last time I kidnapped him out from there, I said, I'm going to sue the whole hospital because they wanted to put him on lithium and he didn't want that. And I took him to Africa.
Wow.
Which was good. Everybody thought I'm mad to take him to Africa in this state. And then he died at the age of 24 because he still had this kind of saying no to everything because of his Asperger's, you know. And I always said, let's go to alternative doctors and let's take away your medication. He didn't dare to take it away because otherwise he'd go into psychosis. And then he started medicating himself, first with cannabis and with all kinds of things. And at the same time, I was medicating him and other homeopaths as well, if he showed up when the time was right. Like he never managed to meet Declan Hammond. We had so many times, but he was always sleeping or something. Not meant to be. Then he got hooked on... He was a rapper, so he got hooked on all the fucking shit, which I'm still so angry about, of Los Angeles and of the tranquilizers together with the opiates.
Mm.
He didn't do much of it, but he was fucked up fully. I mean, like completely. He always had an Excel for me of what he uses and how much. So that's the genuinity
wow.
of him. He never stole anything from me, even though he was sometimes even homeless. I was just desperate trying to help him. And he told me in the end that, you know, and he saved other people. So he had this Jesus-like thing that he would take people from the streets and live and in his home and he would lose his home. And, you know, his name is Amadeus, the beloved of God. So it's a big name to give to a child. So then I had looked for cures and everything. And we were supposed to take him abroad. You know, we found alternative places. My brother, he's an American citizen. He lives in the States. And we had like, okay, now we know how to, we just have to get him out of Finland and out of all the drug scenes and everything. But the time started to go short because his body was degenerating. He was really skinny. And then finally, I was actually in Camilla Scher's seminar and she talked about the noble gases. I had given him every single one except kryptonite. But then I realized he was actually a drug dealer. He was doing pretty well with money because he needed to support himself. I was like, he's all the time really busy, even though he's not doing fine. And I was like, that's a really Krypton thing. Actually, that's his job. In some countries, it might be even a legal job. So I gave him the 10M and he got cured. And can you imagine from 13 years, for actually all his life, I looked for a cure. He became calm. He even watched movies with me. He couldn't stay still for 5 minutes. He was so restless. And he always looked at me from above with a really loving look. And I was like, there's something weird here. I gave it to him on a Sunday. On a Wednesday, he left my home. And we had separated with his father when he was small. And his father wrote me a message. What happened? Our son is so, you know, relaxed and everything is good. And I was for the first time like, yes. You know, now he will come on the plane with us and we'll take him and he's going to get healed. Saturday night, on the night of Dia de los Muertos, on the night of the dead, when the veil is thin, he left. There was nothing on his blood practically. And I gave it to all the doctors and everybody. And I said, could he have died of drugs? They said, no, not with this amount. And he didn't kill himself. He was at his friend's place. He was just found. And then, of course, it was like, what? And I wanted to find out, why did he go? And of course, astrologically, there was huge signs why he had to go. His Pluto was straight on his north node. I mean, he had accomplished his mission on this planet. On the third day, we went to see his body, and he looked really holy. He had like long dreadlocks, and he was a gorgeous guy, but really skinny. And the guy who shows the bodies was like, he said to me three times, on the third day, I have never seen anybody so gone. He repeated it three times. And then I said, can I see his chest? And we took it away, and it was an emerald tree of life. Most beautiful thing I've ever been able to witness. And I was like, wow. And at the same time, I said, okay, he needed to go, but he went with his heart so open that he accomplished his mission on this planet. And then we burned him, and I, you know, I had all these oils for him that he loved, and everything that he loved went together with him. And then when I carried him, his ashes were exactly the same weight, 3,380 grams, as when I carried him as a baby. So I knew that that had birthed me into becoming a death doula. So I've seen the cycle from birth to death. And it's big, but it's such a privilege that he taught me all this in this lifetime. And I know, because we have so many lives together with him, that it's just the way things have to go. And we are kind of like these rebels here fighting for the right cause. He was really rebellious. I mean, way too rebellious for this world. And, you know, I just got to spend 24 and a half years with him. Yeah. So that's why astrology, because I wanted to find out. And that's why ceremonies, and that's why divine purpose and passion, and that's why I went into working with the ancestors. So everything I do, all the manifestation and everything, it's practically just talking to my son and telling him, come on, help mom out a little bit.
Wow.
It's so much easier when he's there, because he was always a higher being than me. And it's not easy when a child is so much higher, you know. So when he's really in the higher realm, it's easier for him and for me also. And of course, I wish he was here. I wish to touch him and smell him and see his laughter and everything. But it had to go like this.
And working as a death doula, I've actually had a couple of people on the podcast that mentioned that they've started doing that, but that is a hugely important role. And actually, I don't know if you ever work with animals, but that's something that I hear so many people that go and put their animals to sleep. And I actually feel like animals deserve to have a natural death as much as humans do. And I mean, it's completely each to their own. I'm not judgmental. Everybody do whatever they think is right. I was watching a YouTube video. I was watching somebody and they were saying about the assisted suicides that's in Canada. It's just skyrocketing, absolutely skyrocketing. Something like 10,000 people a year that have assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm always very careful when I mention these things, because it's very easy to make a judgment when you haven't been there myself. So I say this is very, you know, they say never. And every time in my life when I've said I'd never do something, the universe comes and brings something in my face. It's like, really? You said never? Let's just like try that out for you. So I'm like so careful when I say this, because I can't imagine what it would be to be in that position where you feel you can't go on and you decide to go. Like this, make that choice that you're going to leave. But I really feel like a death doula is something that needs to be common practice these days. Like having, I mean, it has the potential to be in a very enlightening, beautiful, like just as normal as birth is, death is as well. And once again, I say this very, very carefully, because I have not died yet. So I don't know what that would be like. But I say these things carefully because really it is one of our greatest learning opportunities. And I've never actually sat with somebody that's died either. So once again, I'm so careful when I say this, but intuitively it feels to me that we are not giving death the respect and love and learning opportunity that it deserves.
Exactly. Especially in the Western world, because when we look at other cultures like the Tibetan culture or, you know, many, even the Irish culture, I really love how they sing to the body and take them home. And in Finland, we're completely medical. I mean, it's like my son's body was taken away and they told me when I can go and see it. I would have loved his body at home. It's completely not allowed. I would have had to kidnap it. And at our school, Declan Hammond has brought a lot of his wisdom about the homeopathic treatment of dying and sitting with a person who is dying. I've had the privilege to sit with a couple of people that are dying, one who was really a good friend of mine. And I did see that enlightenment also and the cure of the human being, even though she was all bruised and everything everywhere and bleeding. But, you know, when the soul is free, it's like, it's such a beautiful thing to witness. And I hope everybody could get that. And I'm sure, you know, homeopathy can really free people so that they can leave from here. And, you know, if we want to believe, I do believe, but not everybody needs to believe, but if we want to believe in the next life or, you know, of course we want to be, have accomplished what we came here to do so that we are ready to move forward or maybe ready to move to another dimension or wherever we do go. So it's like, if we can assist in any way sitting with this, for me, I feel it a really big privilege. And since earlier I attended births, I think I'm going more towards, you know, because not so many people can stand or can understand or can, and I'm not saying I can understand death, but I don't fear it. Many people fear it. So we need people, like always, when we have like a seminar about death, one or two of the students gets really excited and the rest are a little bit scared. It's so nice that we also have death doulas. And that's something I'm really looking into. And of course, with astrology, we see the charts. You know, the charts are there before. The draconic chart tells the life before or the moment when you came here. And then your chart goes on. You know, it doesn't finish, which I think is a little bit strange. But you can see like which kind of things are kind of like manifesting for the person in the other reality.
Wow.
Yeah. They're big.
So you're saying even after they've passed away, the charts are saying what's happening with them afterwards or what their mission is or what their purpose is?
Yeah, or it could show the next life or so on.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a specialist in that, but, you know, the chart does go on. So it's like you can see what kind of aspects are coming up and so on.
Yeah, I just had a really interesting thing happen a little while ago. I'm just saying, thinking how I say it so I don't identify anybody, but a person burned down their own house for insurance money. And then after this person died, the tenants that they had in their home burned his house down, his rental property burned it down. And for me, that was just the clearest sign that energy does not get destroyed. It just gets transformed. You can call it karma or energy, or you can call it what you want. But I was like, you can think that you can get away with whatever. And it might not be in this lifetime. It might be after you pass, but that energy will want to come full circle and it will want to complete itself and finish itself. And I just thought that was just such poetic justice. It was very, very interesting.
Yeah,
and that it really made me realize that there's just so much that we don't know.
There's so much that we don't know. Bubo Scandinavicus, I saw a couple of dreams about what is behind the veil. One beautiful dream, so it's the owl, was that I was tapped into the Akashic records, which were just up here. I was sleeping and they were just here and I could just pull my lives from there, which was fantastic. I can't do it now. I wish it stayed on. And then there was another library. That was like a library. And there was a door. And I knew that going to the other side of the door is actually, that's where the veil is. And then I went in and I just looked around and the shades of the books were just different. So I realized, and that's also my experience when I work with my ancestors, that they're all the time here. So the veil is just here all the time. And this reality that we see is just a little fraction of everything. So in that way, there really isn't death and the people don't really go away. And it can be that they are really far away, but is there any distance and is there really any time? It's just energy.
And I think that's why for homeopaths, it's not a hard concept to grasp because we work with energy all day long in our clinics. And I'm really fascinated by that kryptonite prescription that you gave. Wow, I've never prescribed that, but I'm definitely going to go look out for that now. And all these incredible birds. Do you think there's a reason why the birds? Like, what is it about the energy of birds that really, I mean, you said your dad also was a bird watcher, but is there anything else about birds that really attract you to that energy?
I think the spirituality and the concept of looking at things from high up. I'm like a suitcase child. I love being in an airplane. So it's like I always feel really clear and I'm really happy when I look at things from high up. And that's how I managed with grief. That's how I managed with quite a lot of, you know, it wasn't easy growing up in especially Ethiopia as a little girl, white girl. You know, there was a lot of racism. I've been stoned and I've seen people die in front of my eyes because it was the worst drought then. So I think already then I learned to look at things from like universal love or from an unconditional love state. And some can say that it's dissociation of trauma. It can be called that too. I'm sure there is a lot of that as well. But for me, it's like a soothing state to have the wisdom of the bird realm. But at the same time, I've done really well with sea remedies because that's also the big mother. So I kind of feel like the whale is like the birds of the sea who bring the big wisdom. So that's why I'm drawn to them. And holding up a big space, holding a school, you know, you hold a big space. So you need to kind of like also withdraw a little bit and to see what is the big picture of what is the plan of this whole thing. So yeah, that's how I'm drawn. The flying and the wisdom of the birds. Yeah.
Beautiful. Can you tell us a little bit about the Homeopathy School of Helsinki? So what is the program like? What do you teach there? Do you do anything online? How is the program run? Can people still sign up? Just like give us the whole package.
Yes. So Homeopathy School Helsinki, we have two programs going on at the moment. One is the four-year program. So I just called in the students. We meet six times a year in our premises where I'm sitting at the moment. And then we have online things happening. It is in Finnish, but we always invite two or three times a year an international speaker. This year, Camilla Scher is one of them, but she's speaking in Finnish. Then Declan Hammond is coming in February. So beginning of February, he will be in Helsinki teaching with us. And then Janie Lavelle is coming to teach the sacred trees of Ireland. And I'll be teaching trees as well. We'll have a tree weekend. So they are always open because we always have people on Zoom as well. So if they are in English, everybody is welcome. And if you go into our Instagram or our Homeopathy School Helsinki pages, I'll send you all the links. You can find what is happening. And then we just started a new two-year program. So it's more intense. And there's a group of 10 people who are already therapists. And they've done like 10 years of homeopathy on themselves and things like that. So that's something that we started trying now because there's many people who cannot give 4 years of their life. So that's what is happening. And then another program that I am running myself with a few of the, actually my team, I have this program called Homeo Mamas. And so far it is in Finnish, but we are translating it into English. So it's like, it's a course of first aid. Like it's a first aid mastery course where you learn everything. There's color remedies, there's acute remedies, there's empowering remedies for the women, there's gemstones, there's all the juicy stuff that I think anybody can use at home.
That sounds amazing. And yeah, that's the problem with homeopathy. Honestly, there's just so much cool stuff out there. It's just never ending. This podcast has truly been a blessing and a curse. Yeah, just help me learn about all these different things. It's unbelievable. Never ending. And so the school has been running for a while because you say you've been the principal for 10 years, but then how long has it been running before that?
The school has run from the 80s. I think it's like 87, 80, 88 when it came to Finland. And it has had different female principals all the long. And this is the first time that we are actually three people running it. It has always been just one person running it. So, you know, that's how it goes. But otherwise, I think our curriculum is pretty similar to the Irish school or to the school in Stroud, to Mission Orland's old school, or the sons are running it. And School of Homeopathy. So it's like we have all the normal stuff, you know, the materia medicas and the organons and things like that. And of course, with a little bit of juju, every school has a lot of juju or a little bit of juju that we bring to it and that we do triturations and provings. I know some schools don't do that, but we really, really love to have that. And then we want to bring the branding and we want to bring the empowerment very strongly in that we have like bright, light, empowered homeopaths that come out of the school.
This sounds beautiful.
Mostly women.
I love that you're operating from that feminine space. I was chatting with Daniel Burge as well on the podcast, and he was talking, you know, just about the matriarchy and operating from that feminine space and feminine intuition. And I really like that. I think that is something that this world needs a lot more. There's certainly a lot less wars and a lot less trauma if more women ran the show. But like you said, once again, the sacred masculine is so important as well. That's a whole conversation itself, but myself and Danitza Apollyon are actually making a new remedy at the moment. I can't talk about it just yet, but actually in this remedy, a lot of the sacred masculine has come out. And that made me really happy because I feel sorry for the men of today because they're in a little bit of a tricky spot, I think. I think a lot of them are just trying to figure out who they are. I mean, us as mothers go through that, you know, when you might have a corporate career and then you become a mum and suddenly you're like, who am I? There's this whole other aspect of yourself that you just didn't know, even know exist. And that struggle of finding out who you are, what is it that makes you tick? You know, like having a child really takes you to the edge of anything that you ever dreamed was possible. And so us as women naturally go through that process of going to the depths, trying to find out who we are, being pushed to our limits and just really struggling with those demons, right? Like a child really, especially if there's lots of sleepless nights, they really push you to the edge. And so a lot of the men don't, I mean, obviously I'm generalizing here, but a lot of them don't go through that journey. And so, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with this, but what I'm saying is that if there's a way to kind of help them embrace their sacred masculinity a bit more, and I feel so sad for all this toxic masculinity talk that's being flung around. And I just look at my own husband who, you know, he grew up with three sisters. He's such a beautiful soul. And he is what I would say is like a healthy, sacred masculine. But I just look at so many men who aren't, and we see the women in our clinics who say all their husbands do is go out and get drunk with their mates. And the reason they do that is because of trauma. Nobody chooses to go and get drunk with their mates instead of being with their beautiful families, unless it comes from a place of trauma. And so there's more work that needs to be done to heal these men and get them to a place where they can stand up and take responsibility of their families, like really protect their families, care for their families, stand in their own sacred masculine and what that means. You know, they are our protectors. I don't know what I would do without my husband. Like he actually in this proving that we're doing, when I got to the C5, what came up for me was, you know, the masculine protects us, but who protects the masculine? That was one of the thoughts that kind of came up for me. And I'm so grateful for my, you know, strong protective husband, but who's there to protect him? And all so much of what you see in the media is just bringing men down. So sorry, this is going on a sideline, but I know you, I'll just leave that with you. I'm sure you'll have some words of wisdom.
I feel the ancestors are protecting them. You know, if they have the ancestral shield and the earth is protecting them as well. And of course, as women as well, you know. And that's the thing, like when you see the young generation, my sons are now 24 and 25, and they are really beautifully, you know, they talk about their feelings, they hold space, they're warriors. That's the thing that nowadays people think that going to a pub and getting drunk is being a warrior, because the men haven't gone through these initiation rites, kind of like go on the field and show that you're a man and work on this, like Declan Hammond, once again, coming to him, he teaches really beautifully the homeopathic treatment of men. And this is what one of the things that's like the men are castrated, especially by Western women, because we are so good. And then we tend to tell our husbands and friends that how good we are. And at the same time, a man needs to be appreciated and, you know, to stand in the full power. And why can't women just say, wow, you're so wonderful in your full power? It's not away from the woman. So, you know, there's like many sides to the whole game. And I think in the end, it's just that all of us have the masculine and feminine inside, that if that is balanced, then you don't need to be superior to anyone else. We just meet from a space of heart and, you know, equality. So it's like, it's such a big thing. And I'm really happy there are remedies for the sacred masculine. And I'm really keen on hearing what you are doing when you know. And actually, I got invited into your group. So another remedy is coming up, I think, in the 2-3 weeks or something.
Yeah, so one of them is the one that was my brainchild, but I got Danette Sunball to help me create it. And then there's the one that she's doing, and the two of them actually completely by coincidence or not actually overlap in quite a beautiful way. And we can't wait to share that with everyone, but we can't say anything just right now.
Oh, fantastic. I think something is coming to me on the post then, because she asked me for my address. So I'm really excited. I need to have space in my calendar for this beautiful wisdom to land on.
Well, actually, I'm new into provings. And in our 4 years, we only ever did one proving. And I'm so sad about that. Like, it's something that you should do if you're studying at least once a year, preferably twice. And now that I've realized how much fun they are, I can't, you know, I've got constant flow of ideas. Of, you know, I'm sure every homeopath that does trituration say, oh, I see that plant. Oh, we should do that. We should triturate that. But have you ever had any impacts that stayed with you quite a long time from a trituration, or any situations that affected you quite deeply? Or
there was a period of time when we did, I think in 5 years, 6 or 7 triturations at school, plus I was doing stuff outside as well. And some of these were meditative provings and some of them were Hahnemannian. So there was a lot happening. Then we did the twin flower, Linnea Borealis, which has to do about the thin line of death and life. And an incident happened at school that really like shook me strongly. And I had to stop for a little while because I didn't know whether the proving had been a part of this or not. And I felt that I had stepped into somewhere I shouldn't step. Everything went fine and all is good. But, you know, it was like we need to respect these situations and provings also, not to be too greedy to just do them all the time. I've also had that greediness. And what I used to do at home is I was putting the powders to my plants. So then I was always thinking, did Amadeus react very strongly to all the provings I did? Because he's such a sensitive. So it's good to be aware of the surroundings and to have the utmost respect. While you do it, I always open the space while I start. And it's important to close the space as well, not to leave it all out there, you know. And when you do these precautions, I think everything is fine. Earlier, I didn't do it because I didn't have the consciousness of closing the space.
That is very good to know. That's very good to know. Yeah. And when you triturate, do you usually do it in one day or over a couple of days?
Usually in one day at school. So we usually do it until C5. But then if I do it by myself, we might do it in like 2 days or however we plan it. We listen to the substance. Like the last time we did Maria Magdalena, we only did until C2 in south of France. And then we came back and did separately on Zoom. Like one of the, we had to do when we heard that Sinead O'Connor had died because she was so strongly connected to the Maria Magdalena. Rest in peace, lovely soul. I feel her very connected. So then we wanted to release all the pain of the women in Ireland, all the Maria Magdalena laundry and everything that had happened. So yeah, I think the most important is to do it in a good group and then just to listen to what the remedy wants to, how the remedy wants to come into this world, how the wisdom wants to be. And then otherwise I feel that it's perfectly safe. It's been done ever since, but it is a very shamanic way of working. So you might sometimes go under, as you might go above. The shadows often can come up as well.
And I have a bit of a just practical question for you is when I'm triturating and the ideas start coming in, I don't want to stop triturating and like writing down. So I like triturate with my left hand and I'm writing ideas with my right hand because I don't want to put the pestle down. I never know which one's the mortar and which one's the pestle and put it down and then write. But practically, how do you do that?
Because you can stop. You know, it just said that it needs to be done in a certain way, but the feminine way makes it easy.
Okay. Well, so, the masculine side of me of the work is like, no, left hand needs to keep going, right hand writes.
Exactly. But actually, that's a really good practice for you as well, because then, you know.
Yeah, left, right brain integration.
We used to always have one person per mortal. But then at some point we said it's so much work and people get wrist problems and some are older and so on. So we usually have like a mother bowl that goes around and maybe a couple of little ones. So, you know, you always have a rest. And because when you are resting, you can observe what is happening in the group, which is so important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, seeing people's postures or seeing how they, seeing what they're doing in their bodies. And okay, that's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
So and you're all in that collective consciousness when you're in that same room anyway. So you're still
you are.
On the substance.
You are. And actually the people who don't join, because it's not compulsory, you know, it's voluntary to come into approving. We can't force anyone to come who is a student. But I always tell them, please come at least to hang around, because when you are on the outside, you're anyways affected to the field, and then you don't understand why you are feeling these things. So it's better to be in the family than outside the family.
Absolutely. Rita, is there anything else that you want to leave our listeners with? Any final message that you want to share with us? I'm scared I might have forgotten to ask you something and then we'll miss out on some crucial point. But is there something that you want to share with our listeners?
I'm actually quite complete. Okay. My heart feels really, really happy. I just want to thank you for your work. I've enjoyed listening to your podcast and I've met new interesting homeopaths. Of course, I'm also searching for teachers for the school as well. So, you know, it's like, it's lovely that you're introducing these people to everyone. And I just want to thank every homeopath for all the work that we are doing for world peace and for the higher purposes of everybody's existence here. And that's exactly what I thought about, because in Organon, the ninth paragraph was one of the reasons I did stick into studying homeopathy. Being a freedom fighter from childhood and reading the ninth paragraph, you know, to be free on all levels, to do the mission that you came here to do. That was boom, I knew I had found my, you know, soul mission. So everything that I do comes from the ninth paragraph. That's the most beautiful thing I know on earth.
That is beautiful. That's something that needs to be on a t-shirt or up on a big poster on the wall.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, Rita, it was so lovely to connect with you. Janie was, you know, saying for a while, you two need to chat. And it was just such a soul-filling experience to get to hang out with you. So thank you so much. And I hope I get to meet you in person soon. I really hope you can join us in Bali. I don't know. I'm sure Janie's probably told you about it, but I really hope we get to connect in person at some stage. But thank you so much for all the work that you're doing as well.
Definitely. And at school, we have this Tuesday container. Like every second Tuesday, I invite people over with different topics. So I already told that I really want you to come and teach at our school. So let's just talk about the practical times and things.
Oh, I'd love that. You know what I've realized is I was chatting with Matthias Banner today, and I actually think my role is that I'm the homeopathic cheerleader. I'm the jack of all trades and the master of none. So I will come and tell your students all about all the other amazing homeopaths that are out there, because I see that that's my role, is actually just being the cheerleader for homeopathy. Give me H, give me O, give me M.
And that is so needed, because we all have our roles, you know. And homeopathy is everywhere. It doesn't belong to everyone or anyone. It's just like, homeopathy is just everywhere. It's like whichever way you do it, whether it's planting trees or whether it's teaching or whether it's doing podcasts, it's all the same. And it's lovely that everybody can shine in the way that they're supposed to.
You are just literally echoing the conversations that I've been having this week, because we had the homeopathic conference in Brisbane last weekend. And that's exactly what we said. Like I said to one of my colleagues here, thank God for the people who are interested in doing the paperwork, the ones who are interested in running organizations. Thank God for that, because I'm not that person. And thank God for the people like Jerry Dendrinos, who when the NHMRC report came out, he was the one that was sitting there reading through thousands of pages of documents and fighting to keep homeopathy alive. And thank God for people like some of these homeopaths that are on Instagram with like 50,000 followers. Thank God for them. That they are flamboyant and gorgeous and people want to watch them, because they're drawing people to homeopathy. And thank God, I guess, for big mouth people like myself that like to talk a lot and so have their own podcast. And thank God for teachers. I'm not a teacher at all. My mom was a teacher for 40 years, but I'm not. It's not what I'm interested in. And so thank God for people who are interested in teaching and people who like doing provings. And, you know, like we need all these different facets of homeopathy to keep it alive. So it takes all shapes and sizes and beliefs and backgrounds to keep this going. So yeah,
exactly. Oh, that's so beautiful. Amen to that.
Amen to that. Yeah, hallelujah. Thank you so much, Rita. And I'm sending you so much love. And thank you so much for coming on today.
Bye-bye.